So let me tell you about this third hour. Welcome to the program. I am Jim Rome. This show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I've got a couple of interviews coming up this hour. Jordan Palmer is a quarterback consultant, and among others, he is working with Joe Burrow this year. So Jordan Palmer, always a great guest, and he is working with some of the top quarterback prospects. Once again, he joins us at 40 past. We are efforting Derek Brown, a top NFL draft prospect and a defensive tackle from Auburn. We will run him down sometime this hour.
Run
sooner
his
than later.
Down.
Alvin, wow. That's not what I meant. That's amazing. If you think that we set that kind of thing up, we don't. Like, it just kind of comes out of my mouth. We're going to run him down, and then Bob is
run
back.
Run his ass down.
Meantime, telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. We've talked about Fury and Wilder at length. I talked about the Lakers and Celtics. Vanessa Bryant is still speaking at the Kobe Memorial. That's taking place at Staples right now. You have your telephone number. I mentioned the Buffalo tour stop is April 11th. Somebody emailed and said, hey, Rome, come on, man. That's pretty funny. That April Fool's joke that you had about April 11th. That's not a joke. That's not a hoax. That's not an internet hoax. That's a real thing. The tour stop. I'm rebooting the Jim Rome World Tour, and it's going to start in Buffalo. JimRomeWorldTour.com. Go there right now for tickets. You can get them before they go on sale to the general public. But you have to have the password jungle. Lots of different tickets are available. VIP packages are still available. I've got a private party that's available. A meet and greet, which is available. That is April 11th at Shays. 1-800-636-8686. All right, as promised, we are joined right now by an NFL draft prospect. He was a unanimous, consensus, All-American defensive tackle. He won the Lott Impact Trophy and Senior Class Award. Outland, Nagurski, Bednarik finalist. 170 career tackles, 33.5 of them for a loss. The 2020 NFL Draft is April 23rd through the 25th. It's going to be in Las Vegas. He will hear his name called pretty early, I'm sure. Derek Brown is my guest. Derek, it's great to have you on the show. How are you?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's good to have you, Derek. So bring me up to date. I know you've been training and prepping for quite some time now. How has the training been going, and how does it feel to know that the combine is underway and the defensive linemen are going to show up later on in the week?
Man, we actually take off tomorrow. So the process is shutting down, just kind of doing some more maintenance things right now than more than anything. Process of training everything. We've been going at it for quite some time now, and you know, just trying to learn how to dive better. Also working to get our technique and everything better down here in Florida.
Derek Brown, my guest. I like that. Now, you posted a great video on social media of you putting in work and the fact that you're laying the foundation for something big to happen at the Combine. What kind of an impact are you looking to make once you get to Indy?
You know, I'm just trying to put my skills on full display, you know, hold nothing back and leave it all there.
Now, listen, so people know the work that you're putting in. It's one thing to see it on social, but when you're at Exos, what's a normal day like for you?
Up here at 7 o'clock to eat breakfast. We train from about 8 to 10:15. Do probably some physical therapy in the afternoon. Then around 1:30, my group, we go back and we go again for another speed session, and then we do workouts again. And so it's kind of like a 2-a-day process.
We're talking to Derek Brown. You know, Derek, to look at that workout video and to hear you lay it out the way you just did, I mean, you can make any workout video look pretty cool, but the thing that jumps out from the video that I'm talking about is it seems that you really love that grind and you love the work that you're putting in. It's hard work, but you seem to be really all about that. Where does the attitude and the approach and the love of the grind come from?
I think, you know, I think that's something that, you know, my parents instilled in me from a long time ago. I got a lot of love for the game. You know, I just don't like it. I love it. I mean, I love what it can do for me, and I love how it can changed my life and just do great things for me. It's been one of those things where, you know, my parents, you know, they always, you know, told me, like, well, you're going to do something, you don't quit till it's over. So that's just how I look at it. I mean, until you know, God chooses for my time to be up, then I'm going to keep doing what it takes to be able to excel at what I do.
Derrick Brown joining us. I'm glad you mentioned family. You said also, quote, my dad was in the Army before he was a sheriff's officer. He also worked at the state penitentiary. He never accepted anybody being mediocre in our house. And that went for me, my brother, and my sister. You learn that you always leave things better than you found them, end quote. It's pretty powerful stuff. So what was life like for you and your siblings?
You know, we had a very structured household. I mean, my dad was never just overbearing. I mean, my dad's a fun guy, but when it came time to work, and he wants results and he wants work, then you know you had to understand that, you know, it's time to do what you're supposed to. Never let us quit anything. You know, it's always something, like, you know, always just a little tidbit of things that he'd always give us, and it's kind of something that, you know, I didn't really realize it back in high school because I was kind of like, man, like, yeah, Dad, all right, I got it. And then I remember, like, my sophomore year in college, I was like, I finally get what my dad's saying.
Believe me, that happens to all of us. It took me a little bit longer to figure that out, but it's so true, Derek. And I've got a couple of sons right now, and I know they're probably thinking the same thing about their old man. Derek Brown is joining us. You know, it's funny. We could talk about your physical attributes, and they're going to be on display for everybody. But your teammates and your coaches at Auburn talk about you as a leader. Your defensive line coach, Rodney Gardner, said, quote, he's got a presence about him, and it's not just on the football field, end quote. So I'm curious, how do you go about being a leader? Is it something that comes naturally to you, or is it something you've also worked on to develop?
I think, you know, being able to speak my opinion, you know, that's something that my mom's blessed me with, being a talker. It's been something that, you know, I've been able to just, you know, have an impact on a lot of people. I never go in the room and try to be the attention of the room, but I am the type of person that goes in the room that tries to make everybody feel like one, and, you know, no different than the other. And I think by doing that, I mean, I get a lot more respect from people than as if I was to go in the room and just try to immediately take over.
See, now, Derek, this is kind of similar to what you just said, but it even goes back to when you were being recruited out of high school. You kept trying to get recruiters to pay attention to and focus on your teammates who were not getting a lot of love. Most guys in your situation would not do that. Why was that important to you at that time?
I grew up with these guys. I was in day in, day out with the ground with these guys. You know, a lot of these guys have been my buddies since Pee Wee football, 6 years old. So, you know, it's just doing everything I could. Like, I had already had everything. So, I mean, at that point, you know, I'm trying to do everything I can to help others.
Talking to Derrick Brown, you know, I'm asking about a lot of different things, but this is also really interesting to me. Marlon Davidson, who played with you and was your roommate, said, quote, I call him Channel 5 reporting live. Derrick has more information than anybody could ever dream of. He knows everything, and if you want to know anything, go to Derrick, end quote. Other teammates talk about the fact that you could be president one day if you want to be. Like, what are the types of things that you like to learn about and then talk to your teammates about?
So I was the student athlete, like, advisory committee president. So I was the president of student athletes at Auburn. So I was kind of in the know, and my teammates always would come to me and ask things. And it's just something that, you know, that over the course of time, that's just kind of what they started to nickname me. You know, I definitely look at it, you know, I was put in a big position of leadership to be voted in to do that. And there was something special that I cherished. And, you know, I just tried to go in day out and do what was best for student athletes.
Got a couple more minutes with Derrick Brown, who's getting ready for the combine and then the NFL draft in Vegas. So you're going to leave Auburn as the first unanimous All-American in 29 years. You tweeted, quote, I still remember when people used to tell me, man, you only get offered because you're big. But little did they know all the hype was real. That's why they reach out now. Be careful what you tell people. They just might make you look silly by proving you wrong, end quote. I think that's great. How much pride is there for you then to leave Auburn knowing that you accomplished all of that and you left your mark?
Man, I mean, it's a feeling like no other. You know, it's just one of those things where, you know, that tweet was kind of like something, you know, like you never really, like, you know, some people forget, but like, I never really forget what my initial, like, when people say certain things, like, you never really forget them. Like, it's kind of what fuels your engine, and, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, for a long time, you know, I built, you know, with my coaches, with my teammates, and, you know, just trying to build my name by itself. Like, I mean, I put a lot of work into that, and you know, it's something, you know, I just put it on display every weekend and just try to go out and do my best.
So bottom line is, for me, the tape's out there, but what kind of a person and player is an NFL team going to get if and when they draft you?
I mean, you're going to get a guy of high character and also a high motive. So, I mean, you're going to get somebody that's, you know what you're going to get on the field, but, I mean, off the field, you're not going to have any issues with them.
The NFL draft is April 23rd through the 25th in Las Vegas. The combine is underway already. He was a unanimous consensus All-American defensive tackle. Derek Brown, my guest. Derek, great to have you on. Listen, thanks so much for doing that. Good luck this week.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Me too. Derek Brown joining us. Great player. The proverbial three-down player. Proverbial guy who can dominate three downs. Daniel Jeremiah, who is one of the most respected draft analysts, wrote about Derek Brown, quote, "He will be a difference maker on day one." Also, another respected analyst, James Big Head Kelly. I love this guy. That's true. James Kelly also thinks that he will be a dominant three-down player.
The way it flies, ice cold, no mistakes.
Actually, what James Kelly said to me in the lead-up to this is, yo, boss. Hey, boss. Love this guy. Big as a house. Three-down star. It's the kind of stuff that James Kelly feeds me. Can I tell you one more thing about James Kelly that I know to be true? He took Tyson Fury. He did have Tyson Fury.
That's right.
That's right, big head.
Okay, man, let's turn.
Hey, all right, tough guy. Hey, smart guy, let me ask you this. Who did you have in 1934? Max Baer or Primo Carnera? Yeah, that's what I thought, James Kelly. That's what I thought.
Flabbergasted.
Still ahead, Jordan Palmer. He's going to join me at 40 past. And also still ahead, my thoughts on Patrick Reed. As I mentioned, if you love to hate this guy, which is pretty much all of you guys, then you did not have a good weekend. I cannot believe the way this guy showed up. But then again, we probably should have known, right? We probably should have known. When we come back, my thoughts on that. Jordan Palmer still coming up. I need an ATP. Send me an ATP. Ask me something I have not been asked before. Never a good look when you untuck a long, bulky dress shirt. Like, you may think that it makes you look casual, but more than likely, you end up looking like a slob. This is why Untuckit makes shirts that are specifically designed to be worn untucked. It's a casual shirt that's not too long and not too short. It's just perfect. Shirts designed so well that GQ, in fact, says that. GQ calls them perfection. Untuckit shirts are a go-to for any occasion, from casual to dressy. Not only do they look good, they feel amazing. Even the wrinkle-free options. Untuckit offers 50 fit combinations, in fact. So tall, short, slim, and bigger guys of all ages can experience the perfect fitting shirt. So log on to untuckit.com, check out all the new arrivals. Use the promo code ROME and get 20% off your entire first-time purchase. You can also visit one of their over 80 retail locations across the country. Stop hiding your shirt with your pants and your pants with your shirt. Untuckit.com, your solution to perfecting casual. And get 20% off your first-time purchase. Untuckit.com, promo code ROME.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Since Jordan Palmer. Wah! I guess I don't need to do that. We're not on TV right now. But just so you know, that was Adam Hawk walking in. Gimping around, dude. Is there a story behind this, Hawk? ATP brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Hi, Jim. What do you dip your buffalo hot wings in? Blue cheese or ranch? She's back. Bella B. Bella. I'm going to Buffalo on April 11th. You know the answer to that question.
I love when you talk hockey.
You love when I talk dressing. Even if I were not going to Buffalo, you know the answer to that question. Blue cheese or ranch? For my wings? For my Buffalo hot wings. Bella, you shouldn't have. Blue cheese, you know this. Every damn day. All day. Ranch. Who does that? Why would I do that? Nah, Buffalo, you know it's blue cheese. And no, I'm not just saying it. Every damn day. Every damn day, blue cheese.
How silly is that?
I mean, how silly is that? There is your ATP. All right, so once again, I mentioned that if you love to hate on Patrick Reed, you had a bad weekend. This dude takes that hate, sits down at his table, and inhales it three times a day, demands seconds, and asks to see the dessert menu. The more you hate him, the more he feeds off that. And somehow, some way, is able to convert all that hate into rocket fuel. Check out this guy's week from front to back. Brooks Koepka, who is arguably the voice, if not the face of that sport, shreds him on SiriusXM. And it was awesome, by the way, and fair and accurate. He called him a cheater who must have been building sandcastles in the waste bunker back when Reed plowed a mountain of dirt from behind his ball. Brooks said that on air. That was Monday. 2 days later, longtime PGA Tour broadcaster Peter Costas jumped onto a podcast, said he no longer has any reason to hold back anymore, and then he outs Reed on four different instances that he's seen the guy improve his lie. So he got literally annihilated by these two. And with golf being so mental and so much between the ears, you would think that a guy getting turned inside out like that would crumble and disappear and fade and no-show at a WGC event in Mexico. Most would. But then again, we're not talking about most dudes. We're talking about Patrick Reed. Patrick Reed just beat Rory and Bryson and Rahm and JT in one of the most log-jammed, star-studded Sunday final rounds you're ever going to see outside of a major. Five of the world's top 15 were in the final two groups alone yesterday, along with 1.8 mil on the line and 550 FedEx Cup points to go along with it. And with all of those stakes and all the heat that this guy got coming in, he outplayed every last one of them on his way to an incredible and largely improbable win, given all the noise surrounding him. Rory's putter went ice cold. JT's driver got too loose. John Rahm's Saturday magic did not carry over. And Bryson three-putted on 17 to clear the way for Reed to win in the face of all that hate. And win he did. Three birds in his last four holes and one gigantic FU to everybody pulling against him. In other words, the entire world. It's a rare dude who plays better when everybody wants to see him choke, not just in golf, but in any sport. Only a few guys can go to a place where they can convert that kind of hate into that kind of premium fuel. And like it or not, Pat Reed is definitely one of those guys. After the round, he said, look, it's not like I haven't gotten this before. It's not like I'm not used to this.
I'm used to it. Yeah, you know, honestly, it's one of those things that at the end of the day, all I can control is me and what I do on and off the golf course. And if I feel like I'm improving each day on and off the golf course and setting a good example for, you know, the next generation coming up, the children as well as my own children, then that's all I can do. And, you know, I feel like I've been doing a good job of that. And I feel like I've been growing as a person and as a golfer. And you know, that's all I can really do.
I know it's a phrase I like to use, but it's so true. Man, that's rich. That is so rich. What an awesome quote. On and off the golf course. I don't know about you, but when I hear that, the first thing I think of is, oh yeah, dude, you're definitely improving on the course. Improving your lie, that is. multiple times, according to Peter Costas. Hey, don't sue me, Pat. It was Costas who said it, not me. As far as improving off of the golf course, I mean, I don't know. I guess if threatening legal action against the Golf Channel for calling you a cheater makes you better off the course, I guess then you're improving off the course. But the icing on top had to be him setting a great example for the next generation. That line is so good. You know, again, whatever goes on between a person and their family, I don't really know. I don't really care. It's neither here nor there. That's none of my business. The tirades against cameramen, camera people. I guess if that sets a good example for the next generation, if you consider your caddy punching fans as setting an example for the next group to come in, I guess. If all the drama surrounding you in the Ryder Cup makes you a good example, if you cheating as much as you do, allegedly, makes you a good example, so be it. I don't know. Does anybody really look at this guy? I mean, you have to look at this guy and you have to respect the way he plays with all that heat. What you have to respect is his unbelievable ability to compartmentalize. I'll give him that. That's Barry Bonds-esque. But does anybody look at this guy and think, man, now there's a dude who's setting the example for those who are coming after him. Does anybody anywhere look at that guy and think that other than that guy? I mean, there's blocking out the noise and compartmentalizing, and then there's selective retention, revisionist history, because in Pat Reed's mind, he is a role model. In reality, he's a guy who keeps on winning despite this warped view of himself. Maybe that's in part why he keeps on winning. I mean, think about this. One day after cheating in the Bahamas, allegedly, this guy fires a 66. One day after his caddy got into it with a fan at the President's Cup, he curb stomped CT Pan in singles for the first point of the week. And then less than a week after Brooks and Costas both were coming for him and shredded him, he went out and he beat the best players in the world over 4 days, and then called himself a great example to the next generation. Like, my man's a heel and doesn't even know it. He's winning despite everybody hating him. If golf needs a villain, no one has ever played that role better than this guy. And the best part of all, he thinks he's the hero.
Setting a good example for, you know, the next generation coming up, the children as well as my own children.
Setting a good example for the next generation and the children, as well as my own children. I mean, I almost respect how myopic it is. Amazing.
I feel like I'm improving.
I'm not sure if this guy just revolts me or if I love him. A little bit of both, man. I know I hate part of it and I respect part of it. Allegedly, Pat. When we come back, a quarterback consultant who has worked with some of the best to spin it, Jordan Palmer, joins me. Do not go anywhere. Before we have that conversation, I do have a sports update for you. Here it is. All right, to be fair, Rich Ackerman. Welcome back. One more phone number that I do want to give you. My personal number. Put it in your phone. Put it under Rome or Van Smack, whatever you want. Pimp it a box. 949-385-0447. 949-385-0447. Call anytime you want. I stay up late. If I pick up, we can have that conversation. If not, just be sure to leave me a voicemail. Just know that I might use it on our podcast. We are joined right now by a former NFL quarterback. He is a quarterback consultant. He has worked with the likes of Deshaun Watson, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Drew Luck, Joe Burrow, Steven Montez, and more. The NFL Combine is underway in Indianapolis. Jordan Palmer is my guest. Jordan, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks
Good.
For having me on.
Good to have you on. So you and I saw each other in Miami, but now the combine is getting underway in Indy. What is this time of year like for you?
Well, I've got kind of two groups going right now. So my draft guys this year, as you mentioned, Joe Burrow out of LSU, Steven Montez out of Colorado, very intriguing prospect. And then a guy that I haven't heard anybody say a peep about, so this might be the first peep, is Cole McDonald from Hawaii, who left early. Prolific passer, second in the country in yards and touchdowns, and looks the part. And a guy that came onto my radar kind of late, and the more I learned about him, the more I fell in love. And so those are my three draft guys. But then Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Kyle Allen are out here basically for the entire offseason. Just got done playing golf with Kyle and Josh. And then guys, some of the other guys, Drew Locke and Jarrison, these guys will come back for certain weeks and about five or six other vets. So I kind of have two groups going, which is great because the draft guys get to throw with guys who were in their shoes 1, 2, 3 years ago. So it's really more of a community than kind of just me up there preaching football stuff all day.
We are talking to Jordan Palmer. Now, one of the things you've talked about in the past is that the guys you work with are generally guys who have been playing football since middle school or earlier, and this period between the end of the college season and the combine or the draft is the only time when they can really focus on personal development without the distractions of school, team activities, etc. I mean, Jordan, given that window and the right coaching, how much can a quarterback improve during this period?
Well, you know, I'd love to put a percentage on it, which is tough. But, you know, if you think about it, let's take Sam Darnold, for example. And I think he's kind of the normal guy, right? He was really good in high school. He had a bunch of offers. He played another sport. Sam was a really good basketball player. He went on to college, played a big-time ball, went on to the league, got drafted high, and away he goes. Think about his career. So he started playing football when he was little, like most of these guys. But growing up, you know, you play other sports. You got school. You got family. You got stuff. In college, you know, you don't play other sports, but you got a lot of school. You got teammates. You got new freshmen you need to bring along. Most of the time, you got new coaching staff, new offenses to learn. And once you get to the league, you know, like my veterans, for example, Sam's not with us today because he's got marketing stuff, right? You know, you get to the league, then you're busy in the offseason. At some point, you get married, you have kids, you know, you got life. But the draft represents an opportunity of a couple of months where you have no teammates, you got one coach. You don't have to worry about anything other than yourself. You don't have other sports. You don't have classes. And so I think it represents the greatest window in their entire career for them to really take a step, and not just physically, like with mechanics and accuracy, but also in the scheme of things with, you know, as a person and the sports psychology side, what do you actually think about yourself in terms of confidence, figuring out how to use your platform for good. We do a lot of charity stuff. And so it creates an amazing window for these guys to really take a step. And I've been able to a couple of guys do that and get blessed to continue to do it year over year.
Jordan Palmer, former NFL quarterback, is a quarterback consultant right now. The NFL Combine's underway in Indianapolis, and we're talking about some of the guys he's working with. Jordan, so what about Joe Burrow? Take me back to last season. What did you think when you watched him play?
Well, for me, it started in June. So I had run camps where I have high school kids come called QB Summits, and it's not an invite only. Anybody can come. And I bring in college guys as my counselors, and it's not too dissimilar from a lot of other camps out there. But I had Joe Burrow. I had heard some things about him, the year before, really two seasons ago. Coach Orgeron mentioned something to me once he went there, and I heard a couple buddies, you know, former LSU guys say, hey, man, this kid's a stud. So not this past season, but the season before, I watched every snap that he played. And outside of LSU fans, I don't know that many people did. And the story was that really the first half of the season, they weren't clicking on offense. They were predictable. He had a lot of drops. Same guys, a lot of drops. And like an abnormal amount of drops. And in the second half of the season, he seemed to, you know, when I watched him, if it was incomplete, well, the ball was in the right spot. Just something else didn't happen. And I think teams are starting to see that on tape now that they're looking at him. But, you know, in June when I met him, I mean, I think he was staring in the barrel of being a six-round pick. And but when I got to know him and I had Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, a couple other guys around him, and they all said, man, this guy's a little different, man. He's a little bit more confident than these other guys his age. He's a little bit more mature than these other guys his age. And after I got to spend a weekend with him, watch him throw, spend time with him, sitting around a fire pit talking, all of it, I realized this guy was on the brink of something really special. I did not know it was going to go like this. I'm not sitting here saying I thought he was going to throw 60 touchdowns and go number one. but I did think this kid's a first-round pick. I said it on some media stuff last summer. And so it really, for me, it started with that. And then once you got two or three games into the season, I realized that this train was not going to slow down. He just played with a different level of confidence that I've seen. You know, you talk about, I think he had seven games that he played in where they were playing top 10 teams, and the result was the same. You know, he'd throw for however many yards and touchdowns you can throw in a game over and over and over again. And then as he started to really have success and started to snowball, which is when guys who are new to it can start to really, you know, buy into the hype or believe what they're hearing or any of these other traps, as we talked about the season, he just did a fantastic job, a very mature job of avoiding every trap that was set for him when guys have sudden success. And he's riding all the way through it. And now he's entering the league as confident as you can be. And he's, you know, he's throwing every day with guys who were in his spot a couple of years ago. And I put some other great people around him as well. And so I think he's poised to have a monster rookie year.
Jordan Palmer is joining us. There's so much to like about him, the way he carries himself, the way he plays, his head for the game, his accuracy. We can go on and on. You can talk for hours about that. But, of course, this is the time of year, Jordan, where people freak out about tiny details, and they look to shred every draft prospect. As an example, Joe's hands were measured at 9 inches. So what's your reaction when you hear that? Or more importantly, what is your reaction when you hear people freak out about that?
Well, it's funny, that kind of, the whole hand size thing kind of started when I was playing. I started hearing people talk about it, and I think there's logic behind it, right? If a guy can't grip a football, how does he throw it in the weather? The problem is that we've seen some guys, Jared Goff's got 9-inch hands and like $125 million and a couple of Pro Bowls and a
right.
Super Bowl appearance. So the problem is there's just been guys that have small hands that have played well, and there's guys with big hands that can't play. So it's not a 100% foolproof thing. It's kind of like height for me. Like, do I want him to be 6'3", 6'4"? Sure. Would I take Drew Brees first overall if I knew what was coming? Yes. So you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. What I tried to do to dispel that is I've got a little thing where I measure guys' grip strength because I kind of want to dispel that. And it's too early for me to release what everybody's are, but I've been measuring every quarterback I've been around's grip strength, and his grip strength is up there with the strongest. So I don't know if that matters either, but I just look at Joe and I go, look, this guy's the first pick in the draft. You know, 9-inch hands, do I wish they were 10.5? Sure. But I just don't think it's enough to concern me outside of just something to talk about on a Monday.
Jordan Palmer, my guest, for a few more moments. All right, so what about Steven Montez from Colorado? What do you make of what you've seen from him so far in workouts? What do you like about him?
Well, I think him and Justin Herbert are going to have the two strongest arms in the draft. And Herbert's been out there with me before and looks amazing. He's got a big, strong arm, big, strong kid. Montez is going to be right there with him, however you want to score it, in terms of arm talent. He's got a bunch of wild throws on tape. And then he's got some head-scratching plays on tape, too, like a lot of these guys do. What I love about Montez is that, you know, he played in three systems in a couple of years. He never really got settled. He played for defensive head coaches. So he hasn't really been developed like some of the other guys have been. And for me, that always looks at upside. Whether a guy plays like Patrick Mahomes in a spread offense, it's hard to really evaluate. Or when a guy's had multiple systems and had to change his philosophy and belief system over and over again at a young age, that can ruin guys. Or it can also help you find the diamond in the rough. I think that's what I found. He's an El Paso kid, and I played at UTEP. So not too many El Paso kids are in this position, and so I've been paying attention just because of that. And he's done enough to get you really excited, and I've seen a lot of development in a short amount of time. He's all ball, you know, and he's going to be he's 6'4", 6'5", 230, and can run and a powerful guy. So I think he's a guy who is just set almost like a Derek Anderson type player. Except he can run around and create time and space. And Jim, you and I have talked about this. I think the future of the game is the quarterback's ability to create time and space. I literally haven't trained a quarterback that can't move because I don't think it works. So Steven is definitely that.
Well, Josh Allen is definitely that too. Jordan Palmer, my guest. Before I let you go, what about Josh Allen? I know you're not going to take credit for all of it, but how much has he grown as a quarterback since the time you first met him, and what does the next level look like for him?
Well, I certainly don't deserve much more than a tad with him. I mean, he's a worker. You know, this is a son of a third generation farmer. He knows work ethic. He's a powerful dude. He's got to be one of the, if not the most powerful quarterback in the NFL. just in terms of his ability to create energy, whether he's doing that to run or he's doing that to launch a football. To be honest with you, he's ahead of where I thought he'd be at this point. I knew he'd get drafted high. I knew he'd be a guy at some point, you know, a real guy at some point. But I did think it would take a year, two or three. He only played really half of a season last year with injuries. He had that, got hit on the elbow last year and had to miss about half the season. And then this year he had a bunch of new pieces, new running back, two new wideouts, new system. And man, he just took a massive, massive step forward. And what that does to a guy like that is confidence-wise, they start to feel invincible. They start to feel like they can, like, you know, that they're the best player on the field. He certainly was the most powerful and the most explosive quarterback on the field, any field. But now I think he's stepping in, as particularly as this season approaches. He'll be stepping on the field feeling like he's the best player on the field. And that's when you start to go move into that upper echelon of the top couple guys in the league. And the future is really, really bright for him. He's got to continue to take hits wiser. He takes a lot of big hits, and that speaks to his toughness. But that comes with maturity and time. That's not anything I can simulate out here on the driving range. You got to do that on the course. And so I think he's going to take another massive step this year.
Hey, Jordan, one last thought. You mentioned Sam Darnold. He's had some tough luck as it relates to getting mono this past season. How frustrating was that for him, and what do you make of the way he responded to the challenge?
Well, it's not talked about because no one was paying attention, but he finished the year really well. Hit a big win versus Dallas, played really well in the last few games of the season. You know, one of the things that I told him when he was sick was, you know, in my opinion, the guys who sign the massive second contracts, they don't sign massive second contracts because of the touchdowns they throw and the games they win. They sign massive contracts for dealing with stuff, not necessarily specifically mono, but dealing with that and the Monday night debacle with the ghosts comment and the New York media jumping on them. They get paid the massive contracts for handling those seasons of life and then throwing touchdowns and winning games. And so I just love the way that Sam responded to all of that. It just shows that they have their franchise guy. They can put everything on him. And, you know, as soon as Sam gets a year where he's pretty clean in the pocket and, you know, in terms of buying time, moving around, making plays, Sam's one of the best in the league right now. But as he continues to mature as a player and gets more game reps, you know, he's really only played two half seasons. I think the Jets have a lot to be excited about with him. And I think he's, you know, one of the bright young stars in this league.
Another awesome conversation. He's a former NFL quarterback. He is a quarterback consultant. He has worked with the likes of Deshaun Watson, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Drew Luck, currently working with Joe Burrow, Steven Montez, Cole McDonald, and more. The NFL Combine's underway in Indianapolis. Jordan Palmer, my guest. Jordan, that was awesome as always. Thank you so much. That's how you close the show. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Always good to talk to you, Jordan. Always look forward to it. Jordan Palmer, that is so interesting. All good stuff. And that's that. As I mentioned, that's how you close the show. The huge call is sponsored by Capital One Venture Card. When you earn unlimited double miles on every purchase, your next trip is closer than you think. What's in your wallet? My thanks to Kevin Ioli. NFL draft prospect Derek Brown played his college ball at Auburn. Jordan Palmer, 7-year NFL vet and a quarterback consultant. And that's it. Really quickly, JimRomeWorldTour.com. JimRomeWorldTour.com. Get your tickets to the April 11th Buffalo Tour Stop. We're rebooting it. It's back. You need a password, though. The password is jungle. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. See you tomorrow. We're out.